From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, 25 years of Hubble Space Telescope. What have we learned? Here's what's happening. Well, shades of Ferguson, Missouri, but much bigger. Maryland's governor has called up the National Guard after rioting gangs attacked police, injuring 15, torching cars, burning buildings, going on a widespread looting spree in a downtown section of Baltimore. The governor there, Larry Hogan, has issued a statement saying he's declaring a state of emergency, calling up the National Guard. In addition, deploying 500 state troopers and asking for 5,000 police officers from neighboring states to deal with this violence. The looting, rioting, and threats of further violence followed the funeral of Freddie Gray, who died April 18th after being injured while in police custody. The 25-year-old Gray was being transported in a police vehicle when something happened. He suffered injuries that proved fatal. In a moment, John Lott joins us for a couple hours, and we'll get you to chime in on this tragic situation in Baltimore. And in the next 2 years, robots will be used to bolster police forces patrolling malls and other public areas in Dubai. It'll happen here, too, one day. Dubai police will be turning into robocops in the next few years. 9 out of 10 troops in Nepal are said to be involved in search and rescue operations as that country now pleads for more foreign aid to deal with a massive earthquake that killed 4,000 people. And the 800-mile San Andreas Fault, which runs from Northern California down to Mexico, has been the source of the state's biggest earthquakes. Known as the Sleeping Giant, it is one of the more than 350 faults that are found across the state. Scientists are now predicting that the risk of a mega quake in the next 30 years is higher than they previously thought. And the man who predicts earthquakes, Jim Berkland, with us. Jim, do you concur with what these scientists are saying?
Well, I've been hearing that now for 30 years.
Yeah, you have.
It's due within 30 years, and they have no new evidence except for trying to determine the difference in time between the arrival of the P wave and the S wave. And they have a few seconds to do something about it. But meanwhile, we have to strengthen the buildings and alert the people to what they can do. They can't just, what did I say, if you just ignore the possibilities, you're going to suffer. Now, this, in my newsletter, and I've been publishing it now monthly for 26 years.
Yes, you have.
I talked about this window in April, which was based on the highest tides in April, and the new moon on the 18th, the closest approach to the moon in months on the 16th, and that combination produces extremely high tides, and that gravitational effect does cause warping of the various plates. And so, as I had predicted, the World Series quake, based largely on the highest tidal force in 3 years.
That was back in 89, right?
The window that I published in the newspaper was October 14th to 21st, and the quake was on the 17th. But I had not only the tides to look at, but the record number of missing pets in the lost and found column. Unprecedented whales beaching themselves alive at Ocean Beach, San Francisco, and also in Santa Cruz. Geyser activity slowing down, mineral springs, hot springs cooling down and slowing down. There were seagulls flying miles inland. There were many, many clues.
And you're not seeing those clues now, though, Jim, are you?
Well, that's right. And one of the problems is the poor newspapers have cut way back on their... budgets, and there is no lost and found column.
Well, that's a good point. Jim Berkland's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. I'll always remember him telling us, look in the lost and founds for lost animals. When animals disappear, they're heading for the hills, folks. Initial tests have found that 5 probable new cases of the rapidly spreading avian influenza on commercial poultry sites in Iowa, now affecting 6 million birds, could go up to 9.5 million birds. They're just going to have to euthanize, kill all those chicks. The government is lowering the recommended amount of fluoride added to drinking water for the first time in more than 50 years. Somewhat of a victory for us, though fluoride should be taken out, I think, entirely out of our drinking water. Some people are getting too much fluoride because it is now put in toothpaste, mouthwash, and other products. So the government, for the first time in 50 years, is saying lower the amount of fluoride in the water. And how about this? A controversial artificial sweetener, aspartame, is being removed from Diet Pepsi in the United States amid consumer concerns about its safety. This is a smart move by Pepsi. Aspartame-free cans of the drink will go on sale beginning in August here in the United States. Chipotle, the Mexican grill, will begin preparing only food that is free of genetically modified foods. Jeffrey Smith with us, an expert on GMOs. Another victory, Jeffrey.
Absolutely. It's the next domino to fall. And this is something that we've predicted. We saw back in 1999 when, in April 27th, Unilever said no more GMOs in Europe. The next day it was Nestle's. When Yoplait yogurt said no more growth hormone, genetically engineered drug from Monsanto on February 9th, 2009, 2 weeks later, Danone capitulated. In 2014, when Cheerios said no GMOs in their cereal, 2 weeks later, Grape Nuts said the same thing. So I'll predict that there will be other chains also copying Chipotle's bold move. Chipotle actually started a year and a half ago saying it was going to label GMOs even while it was still serving GMOs, and their market share increased, and the investors and Business Week all commented that their marketing plan was genius. Now they have another wave of publicity for having removed GMOs at the perfect time. I was on The Daily Show 3 days ago. I'll be on The Doctors next month. This is a very big time for people learning about GMOs, especially in the wake of the WHO's recent announcement that Roundup is a probable carcinogen and Roundup is laced in most GMOs.
You know, and I just received word from some people I know that they have filed a class action suit against Monsanto because of Roundup.
Not only that, but there's 30,000 doctors in Argentina that signed a petition asking their country to ban it. The federal prosecutor in Brazil asked their government to ban it. This is a big deal, the fact that the WHO has declared it a probable carcinogen, something we've known from the research, but now it's official. And more other diseases are also related to Roundup, and that's expected to come out as well.
All right, Jeffrey, thanks. We'll keep in touch with you on this incredible story. Chipotle, the Mexican restaurant chain, doing away with genetically modified foods. Now, we're just hearing this, but a former Coast to Coast guest, Colin Bennett, a British researcher who is just a favorite among ufologists for all his work, died several months ago. That's just trickling into us now, thanks to Lauren Coleman, of course, the cryptozoologist. Colin Bennett died apparently around December 13th, suffering two strokes. He was a great, great ufologist. Stephen Hawking saying that humans should go and live in space within the next 1,000 years or simply die out. He says we must continue to go into space for the future of humanity. Okay, up next, we're going to jump right into this story that's going on in Baltimore, Maryland right now. John Lott will join us. We will talk about it and take calls in the following hour. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're going to follow for the next couple hours the breaking story in Baltimore, Maryland, where rioters and looters are just going nuts. So far, 15 police officers have been injured. Over 20 people have been arrested. There should be much more by now. We're going to bring in John Lott. Of course, he's the president of the newly formed Crime Prevention Research Center. He is an economist as well, and he is a noted author, including More Guns, Less Crime. John, let's bring you in here and chat about this sad situation in Baltimore, Maryland. I was able to witness it in Ferguson, Missouri, though it was much smaller than what we're seeing out there today. Your reaction to so far today's events?
Well, it's a real tragedy all around. I mean, the long-term implications of this are going to be devastating for the people that are there in the city. After the cameras have left, the consequences of this are going to continue. The businesses that are destroyed aren't going to be replaced. Jobs are going to be lost. people are going to be poorer than they would have been otherwise. I mean, there's some people, obviously, who are taking advantage of this to get TV sets or other things from different stores, so they may temporarily feel better off, but it's, the long-term consequences are going to be horrible. And besides that, you know, we still don't know exactly what happened in this young man's case there.
Freddie Gray.
Even if it turns out to be correct that the police there behaved improperly, I mean, what does that have to do with destroying all these little businesses that are around there? What do those individuals have to do with this? I mean, this, nor is it clear how threatening all the police officers solves this problem. You know, it's, we've already seen slaying of police officers the end of last year in New York City that directly stemmed from someone who felt aggrieved by the Ferguson situation. I mean, who knows what type of additional fallout that we're going to have from this. But, you know, if the individuals, if the individual police officers who were involved in arresting Mr. Gray did something wrong, it's not obvious why all these other people are going to be punished.
Well, as I saw in Ferguson, Missouri, John, and as we're witnessing tonight in Baltimore, you have a number of young youths who are unhappy over everything, and probably other people who have come into the area to disrupt things for their own purposes. And then, of course, the thieves and the looters who are just out to just make some money or to raid the CVS store, which was burning, and grab what they can there. I think just watching and witnessing what I've seen tonight, police in the Baltimore area have been pretty restrained, don't you think?
Well, as far as I can tell, they've been extremely restrained, maybe almost too restrained in a sense, but it's hard to blame them given the threats that are being leveled against the police. You know, they seem to take it pretty seriously, the threats from the Bloods and the Crips and other gangs there threatening to kill police officers that they see around there. I mean, when people complain about the militarization of police, basically what the militarization involves is allowing them to have protective gear, allowing them to have vehicles or shields or helmets or other things that can protect them. Here we have, you know, tons of rocks and broken bottles and other things being thrown at these officers. We have these death threats from gangs and others there. You know, if you want police to be able to move into an area and actually secure it, you have to make it so that they're somewhat protected at least. I mean, it's going to be a dangerous enough job even with those types of protections.
The Baltimore Orioles game tonight was, you know, canceled. School has been canceled. All those people who were working at that CVS drugstore that got burned, they're out of work unless CVS is able to move them around someplace. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. This affects a lot of people. A lot of people, John Lott.
Right. Well, it affects them now, but it's going to be a long-term effect on these individuals. You know, anybody... I mean, I'm sure Ferguson's not going to be rebuilt. Anybody who's been to Detroit or other places. I grew up in Detroit.
Me too.
And I was there when the riots occurred in 67. I remember areas that were nice areas of town before the riots and the burning and what they were like afterwards. Those areas, if you go back and visit, you'll find they're still burnt out. The very lots that were burnt down then are still burnt out. And people have left the city, and so you make it more dangerous. You increase the cost of insurance for the companies and the businesses that do remain. And, you know, my guess is a lot of the businesses that are destroyed now are never going to be rebuilt.
I want to talk a little bit.
Go
ahead, John.
Go ahead.
No, finish up.
I have a son who goes to Johns Hopkins and, in Baltimore, and I have driven through there more than a few times recently, and about a year or so ago, I got lost getting to a school. Ended up going through parts of Baltimore that were in pretty third world level to begin with.
Yeah.
And, you know, the living conditions are not something that one would want to have to experience oneself. But, you know, that those bad areas are just going to expand as a result of this type of damage.
John, the death of the 25-year-old Freddie Gray, which was the catalyst for what has gotten out of hand now in Baltimore, he apparently had a switchblade on him and ran from police when they were in the area. They were on their bicycles, the police were. And one police officer jumped off his bike, chased down Freddie. They tackled him. Somewhere along the line, the guy suffered some kind of spinal injury. There was video of them putting him into a van. I mean, they weren't there beating him or anything there. We don't know what really happened leading up to that. He looked like he was grimacing. He looked like he was in pain. But then apparently, according to his family, 80% of his spine was severed at the neck, 3 fractured vertebrae. His larynx was injured. Something happened to this guy.
Yeah, look, I mean, I have no clue. I mean, it doesn't look good. But the timing, when it occurred, what happened, was he trying to resist arrest when something happened? I have no idea of the circumstances. It doesn't look good. I think my concern right now is that the police have been painted in such a bad way by everybody from the Obama administration to many others that and so much misinformation about past cases where it wasn't deserved that you have a tinderbox. And now when if you do have something that goes wrong, and it's quite possible, I mean, I have no idea, but it's quite possible something went wrong in Baltimore with the behavior of the police there. I mean, one can speculate. Maybe he wasn't buckled in the back, had his handcuffs on, put his hands behind his back, and maybe they stopped quickly, and he fell into the shield in front of him, and was badly hurt that way. I have no clue. We'll have to wait and see. But you see these claims. Look at the Obama administration report on the police department in Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
I've read a lot of statistical reports over the years. This was really poorly done in the sense that they didn't even try to go and deal with obvious concerns. I just give you one simple.
Well, and it made the police in Ferguson, it made them seem like they were Nazis, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was completely uncalled for. I'll give you one simple example. They point out that 67% of the population in Ferguson's black, and they'll say, look, 85% of the traffic stops involve blacks and so on. The thing is, I'll just give you one simple example. For the 7 surrounding cities around that border Ferguson, their average black population is almost 90%.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is if they had really just tried to account for the city of residence of the people in the traffic stops, that would very likely explain for the entire difference in terms of the high rates of blacks being stopped. I've talked to people in the area, media and others, and when the Obama report goes and talks about trying to get money from traffic stops and what have you, what they're trying to do is get it from people who don't live in Ferguson. Well, the people who don't live in Ferguson are extremely heavily black. And so it's not so much necessarily that they're going after blacks, but that they're just trying to go after people who don't live in Ferguson to make them, export the tax burden. That's if you believe the tax burden story that the Obama administration said. I'm just saying, that's a simple thing. I'm working with a major news organization right now for Freedom of Information Act request to get the data from the Department of Justice report. You'll notice in their report, they don't list any tables. They don't actually put out data in a form that you can go and evaluate in any way. And so Freedom of Information request will hopefully get that, and we'll be able to answer some questions. But you have other things that have gotten a huge amount of attention. Last year, there was a report by ProPublica and Slate claiming that young black males were 21 times more likely to be killed by police officers than young white males. It's just complete garbage report, but yet it was something that was repeated over and over again on the national news. So I'll just give you one simple issue with that. They're looking at justifiable homicide data from the FBI. What they don't tell you is that only about 1% of police departments report the justifiable homicide data, and they're overwhelmingly from urban areas that are very heavily black. And so to go and take a small snapshot of that and go and assume that applies to the rest of the country is just uncalled for.
John, when we come back, I want to digest what's happening with police departments around the country and why these episodes are occurring. We'll be back. Welcome back. John Lotz with us, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. John, as you well know, listening to this program and being a guest for so many years, we support police officers in a big way on this show. But there's something going on here, something weird, and I can't figure it out. What's going on?
Weird in what sense?
It's just that these episodes occur. Is it because we now have social networking? Did they always occur? We just didn't know about it? What's happening here?
Right. Well, I mean, starting with the Trayvon Martin case in Florida, I mean, maybe even going back to the Louis Gates arrest in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Rodney King, is that too far back?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that you're getting decades ago now. I'm just saying in the last 5 or 6 years, there's been a discussion and an emphasis on kind of claims about discrimination of the legal system against blacks. And you know, this may be a bad case that happened in Baltimore. But the problem is, I don't know yet, because we don't know what the testimony's been from the officers that they've already debriefed on this. But you know, whether it was a Trayvon Martin case or whether it be the Michael Brown case in Ferguson or the Louis Gates case in Cambridge, a lot of people got really upset about those cases. And I think objective people looking at it would realize that those concerns were misplaced. You know, neither the Obama administration or grand jury in St. Louis County were willing to charge Officer Wilson with anything that was wrong. It's not obvious what he should have done. I mean, here he had this 6'4", 200-pound man who had gotten into his vehicle through the window and was fighting him over his gun at that point, and then ran away. And then it's only when he was charging back at the officer that the officer fired. I mean, it's not obvious what any other officer in that situation would have or should have done. In the Trayvon Martin case, there you have a situation where, you know, even the prosecution conceded that Trayvon Martin had George Zimmerman on the ground, his back was on the ground, and he was pounding George Zimmerman's head into the concrete there. The debate between the witnesses was, how many times? Was it only 4 or 5 times, as the prosecution's medical expert was saying? Or was it more times than that George Zimmerman's head had been bloodied by being hit into the cement that was there? And, you know, it's not really clear what else you want somebody to do in that situation. If they're in fear of their lives, and I think most reasonable people in that situation, when your head's being pounded into the cement there and you're on your back and the person's on top of you,
you're going to fight back.
Would have a reasonable expectation of fear that they were at least in danger of serious injury, which is the requirement that's there, which is why we allow people to go and defend themselves. And even in that case, I mean, here we have George Zimmerman is Hispanic and a quarter black. You know, and yet somehow it was transformed into a white versus black issue that was going on there.
Well, you know, the media blows some of this out of proportion, John, there's no doubt. But, you know, back to the police episode again in South Carolina not too long ago.
Right.
The individual who stopped at a car, which was not his, and he, you know, he gets up, he runs out of his car, the police officer chases him, something happened, but he shoots him in the back.
Right. No, I mean, that seems I mean, it seems in that situation, the police officer was either too lazy to go and chase after the individual. There was no direct threat, you know, by any reasonable person standard. It wasn't like...
Just let him go. He had the car. He had his driver's license. Let him go.
Right. Yeah, it's the only way you could justify shooting somebody in the back like that would be is if you had a strong belief that you were endangering others by letting somebody go. Like if he had a gun that was wavering and you thought he might go and shoot somebody else, then you could go and justify.
Right, or if he's wanted in a murder or something like that.
Right.
There
are ways you could justify, but here you had a guy who's behind on his child support payment, and it's, you know, he wasn't threatening anybody. He just seemed like a guy who was afraid
and ran.
And lost his head and ran away.
Well, and that's a big problem, John. They seem to run away or do things that are foolish. I mean, like Michael Brown again back in Ferguson. Had he just listened to the police officer and not scuffle with him or whatever happened, that kid would still be alive today. So, one, I can't understand why these people panic and run. Do they all actually think cops are just going to kill them and shoot them at random?
I don't think the guy in South Carolina was running because he thought the police were going to. I think he probably ran because he didn't want to be arrested. And he probably knew that there was a chance he was going to be arrested. Who knows what's going on in people's minds? But there was no evidence that the police officer was threatening him. The police officer had kind of come up just as you were with any traffic stop, had gone back to his car. Just like, I mean, I have to confess, I've been pulled over by police for speeding more than a few times in my life. And, you know, the police go back, they sit in their car, you're, you know, drumming your thumbs for a few minutes while you're waiting for them to do the check on the computer and whatever else they're going to do on you and fill out the forms. And, you know, my guess is, you know, there was no threat that was being put against him at the time. So, look, there are bad cases. People make mistakes. Some police officers do stupid things. But I think there's a bigger story that's going on here. There's been kind of a building up of animosity and anger over the last 4 or 5 years that I think has really created a tinderbox. I mean, you had the two officers that were slain in New York. The killer there apparently had traveled from Baltimore up to New York, apparently, according to...
To kill police.
To kill police.
Yeah.
He was purposely... And of course, he kills two minority officers when he goes up there. And so, you know, I really think people need to think twice before they go, particularly people on positions of authority like the president and Eric Holder and others, before they politicize these types of events, because they're real lives that get hurt as a result of these things. I understand there may be political benefits there, but when the justice system has been able to go and investigate, you know, the South Carolina case seems clear-cut, fine. That's a case where somebody could speak out once it's been determined what's happened there. But normally in the past, presidents have refrained from making these types of judgments until courts have spoken because they were worried that it would actually affect the trial and other things that were there, you know, to prejudge it, make it difficult to go and prosecute people. That doesn't seem to be a concern that's happening these days. Go ahead.
It's 1:46 in the morning in Baltimore right now. What would you do if you were a police officer and you saw some guy burning down a building? I think you have a right to shoot the guy. Is that too extreme?
I mean, you'd have to have a little bit more going on there than simply him trying to burn down a place. I mean, you know, the normal legal standard is that you have to have some type of reasonable belief that you or somebody else is in serious danger of serious injury or death.
Well, there could be people in the building.
If you think there may be people in the building, right, in that case, you can be justified in doing that. It seems to me that a lot of the town was already evacuated there, but, you know, there's still a chance that maybe if you believe that that's a reasonable chance, then that could justify it. But otherwise, it depends on what the police officer could say.
Well, and like Ferguson, I'm assuming, and I don't know this area of Baltimore, Maryland. I used to go to Baltimore as a kid to see my aunt, who still lives in that greater area there. But I'm assuming that the area that has been burned, most of the people who live in that area are economically less fortunate than others, and they're the ones right. who are suffering. Their stores are burning down. I don't think CVS is going to rebuild in that area. So they're out. And then what about the poor people who needed to go there to get their medicine? Jeez, Joe.
Right, well, they're going to pay higher prices. They're going to pay higher prices both because there's going to be fewer stores offering the services, and also what does one think happens to the insurance premiums for those companies? And wages are going to go down because there are going to be fewer businesses there offering jobs. So, you know, people are going to get hit in both ways. They're going to be hit because it's going to cost them more to live, and they're going to be having fewer jobs and get lower salaries.
Well,
it's something that's going to last for a long time. I mean, these areas, when you have this type of devastation, don't recover very quickly. You're exactly right. CVS isn't going to rebuild the store.
No, they're not. I think protest is important. It's a constitutional right. The protesters during the Vietnam War were absolutely correct. They were accurate with what they did, and they were justified. But when it gets violent, when things get out of hand and protesters become looters and destroying property and eventually killing people who may be in buildings or cars, then it's out of control and it's got to be stopped, John.
Right. Look, one general point is my belief, at least up until recently, I can't say for certain right now, but has been that blacks are more trusting of police than most people may seem to believe by just looking at the polls. And I like to try to look at things other than polls, you know, actual behavior by people as a better proxy for what they believe, you know, what they do rather than what they say. And what I've looked at is the rate at which different people turn to police to report crimes. So, for whites, generally, about 45% of violent crimes committed against whites are reported to police. About 54% of violent crimes committed against blacks are reported to police. For Asians and for Hispanics, it's actually even lower than it is for whites. And that's a pretty big difference. And the thing is, you can break it down by income. You know, poor blacks compared to poor whites, or middle-income blacks compared to middle-income whites, by where they live and center urban cities or urban areas generally or suburbs. You can break it down by age or other factors. And no matter how you break it down, blacks are at least more likely to report violent crimes to police than whites or the other racial groups are. And let me put it this way. Let's say you really believe that police were racist against your group. You know, you can look at some of these polls where they claim that mm-hmm. they believe that police just arrest people based on their race, not whether they actually commit.
Well, and some may do that. Some may do that.
Some may do that. But if you're, I'm just saying, for the average person who's trying to make a decision, do I go and report this crime to the police? If you really believe that they wouldn't arrest the guy who actually committed the crime against you, but just somebody else of your own race, if you really believe that the police weren't going to care about the crimes that you were reporting to them, that they would just blow you off, why would you go and report those crimes to the police?
You probably won't.
You would think so. But yet, blacks report violent crimes to police at a higher rate than any other racial group does. And so it seems to me that, you know, you may have You may have a lot of blacks that have criminal records, unfortunately. You know, about 38% of black males have some type of criminal record. I mean, that's an unbelievable percentage to me. But for the vast majority of blacks who are victims of crime, you find that they, in fact, do report violent crimes to police, and they turn to police more than anybody else does. And that indicates to me that they must, some of these concerns may not accurately reflect how people actually behave.
But, John, where are we going as a nation? Because this is a symptom. The things that we see in Ferguson last summer and the things we're seeing in Baltimore right now, it is a symptom of something very, very deep. And, you know, as we looked at the Arab Spring over a few years ago, a lot of people said, gosh, could that ever happen here? This is like our Arab Springs. You've got people, specifically younger people, out of control and very upset. What are they going to do? You know, the city of Baltimore is not going to permit this too much longer. What's going to happen?
Right. Well, look, I mean, we have a real problem in the sense that the unemployment rate for blacks, I guess, the official unemployment rate, something like 12%. I think if one were to include people who have given up working for looking for work at maybe 18% or more. If you're looking at young blacks, particularly young black males, it's been a little while since I've looked at the numbers, but I think it's someplace, the official rate, someplace in the 40% range. You know, those are outrageous numbers. And you look at the education system, particularly in urban areas. You know, to me, I just don't understand why we don't try to introduce more competition into education, to have vouchers or tax credits. So we have competition in everything else. We have competition for your radio show and, you know, everything else. I assume you wouldn't work as hard if you were the only radio show that was on at night. And you got funded by the government, whether or not people listen to your show or not. And I think the same thing is true for teachers.
There are some that think I am funded by the government, John.
Well, there may be conspiracy theories for everything. I don't know.
I'm a disinformation expert. That's what they think.
Okay. But I think, look, there are lots of things that can be done. I'm concerned, though, that, you know, whether it's teachers' unions or whether it be other groups that are there, a lot of those things aren't being done. We're losing whole generations that are there. And so I believe a lot of those things are going to get even worse in Baltimore after this rioting occurs.
And maybe, what if this starts happening in other areas of the country and starts really starting to fester? Then what happens?
Well, I mean, we've had things like this happen before. I mean, I lived through the late 1960s.
When Martin Luther King got assassinated, we had problems.
Right.
But that was expected. I mean, my God, people...
Sure.
People were hurt, frustrated, and everything else. But
right.
These episodes could pop up all over the place.
Right. Well, I mean, then the damage that you were listing out before is going to be true in all those other areas.
Yeah, that is exactly right.
My guess is insurers and other people are already afraid of that. The fact that you have this type of thing occurring in Ferguson and Baltimore and other places may make it so that businesses are already having a harder time than other.
We're on the verge of martial law. That's my prediction, John.
Well, we're pretty close to that right now in Baltimore.
Yeah, we sure are. And let's hope it doesn't spring all over the rest of the country. We're going to come back in a moment with a final hour to go with John Lott. We're going to take your phone calls, get your reaction to what's going on in Baltimore, Maryland, right now as I speak. John's website, of course, and his blog are all set up at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie. We will be right back.